The recording has started.
Great. Thanks, Raymond. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group call on the 30th of January, 2017 at 1500 UTC. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call as we have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you're only on the audio bridge today, would you please let yourself be known now?
Hello?
Yes. May I have your name? Are you only on the audio bridge?
Yeah, this is Shreema Sarkar from Dua Associates India.
Okay, thank you so much. We will note that. And as a reminder to all participants, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes and keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, you may begin.
Sure. Okay, so thank you. And welcome to everybody that joined the call. So the first thing is the agenda review. Caboose, you have your hand up. You want to speak before
yes,
I do the agenda review?
I'm
or,
very sorry.
Or are you okay with waiting until I'm
first? Yes, I see. I'm very sorry. You know that. And
okay, go ahead.
That. Please ask the people to speak slowly. We are not English-spoken persons. English is not our mother tongue. The lady who spoke was just rushing. I don't know what was the reason for such a rush. Please, slowly. Let us follow. Let us understand. If you want that to be included, if you don't want that to be included, do whatever you wish. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that. That's a great way to start a meeting. Okay. Hopefully, I will be speaking slowly enough. Okay. So, in reviewing the agenda, first we have the welcome and the review agenda, which we're doing. Then we have the note about SOIs. Then we have the work team update, then overarching issues, and the community comment one, the update and next steps. Then we go to the community comment two, which is upcoming, and discussion of it. And there's a document that has been posted in the agenda. And then there's any other business. At this point, is there anyone that has any other business that they'd like to put on the agenda? Okay, hearing none at this point, I'll ask the question again, just in case there's any emerging, any other business. So in terms of SOIs, just want to remind everyone that they need to keep it updated. If their circumstances change, they need to update the SOI and should alert the group. Is there anyone at this point who has either just recently updated their SOI or feels the need to update their SOI? I see no hands. I hear no voices. So I'll assume that everybody's SOI is fully up to date. Okay, so the next thing we go to is the work team updates. I'll go through those in numerical order. It's perhaps unfair. Perhaps someday I should start in reverse numerical order, but I would have to warn those reporting first that I was going to do so. So who would like to take that one? Okay, thank you, Sarah. I could go ahead. I don't hear you. I hear a little bit of music, and it looks like it's talking, but I do not hear you. If you're having problems, perhaps I'll go to work team two and come back to you afterwards once you've had a chance to deal with whatever is making it difficult for you to speak. Is it someone from work team two that can do their update at the moment? And who is able to speak? One of the work team two leaders here. So I see Phil and I see Yes, Michael, please go ahead.
Hello, Aubrey, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, thank you.
Aubrey, can you hear me? Is Michael Fleming here? You're asking for working to track two, correct?
I can hear you, so please.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Could you say that again, please? A little bit cut out.
Yes, I can hear you. Please go ahead.
Thank you. So as far as the working track two is right now, we just finished the written protections as far as the CLI and the critical functions goes. We're going to be looking at this week we're going to try to touch up on basically the terms and conditions when you apply for new GTLD. I'm sorry, the word completely escapes me at the current time, but basically we're going to be looking at the big question of whether or not you have the right to sue ICANN. That's one of the things we'll be looking at this week in our working track two meeting. We'll also be looking at some registrant protections as far as the terms and conditions. That's the word. We'll be looking at the terms and conditions. We'll also be looking at registrant protections as far as the background information for applicants goes, the background check, as well as looking at the CC2 questions that we're going to be hoping to jump into. I will try to send out a document or some questions that we might be looking to ask for to the CC2 probably tomorrow. I've sent out a questionnaire, kind of, in regards to the registrant protections, a follow-up to our last meeting. So far, no responses in regards to that, but at the same time, if people have seen that, feel free to please go ahead and start answering to that. There's also, I'm sure a lot of people might be confused at the current time schedule for the Working Track 2 meeting coming up this week. We sent the doodle poll whether or not to keep it at the 20 UTC or the 15 UTC, or to change it to 15 UTC. We will be keeping it at 20 UTC this week. We need to send out the results from that probably tomorrow or so. But we'll keep it at the 20 UTC, and then we're going to try to look at changing it to 21 UTC following for future meetings in the future. So that's where we're at right now, and I look forward to seeing everyone this Friday. This Thursday. Friday for me, but look forward to seeing everyone here soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes, Susan, I see your hand up.
Yes, thanks. It's just a quick request to Michael. Would you be able to resend that document that you mentioned? I cannot find it. So I had an email saying you were going to send it, and then I don't have it. I'd be really grateful if you could resend. That'd be good.
Susan, that's not a problem. Sorry about that. Last week was a busy week for all of us, I could say. I think a lot of us were at NamesCon and some other events that were being held elsewhere in the world, but I will make sure to send that tomorrow. I'll make a mental note of that now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or questions? Okay, if not, I'll go back to you, Sarah. Are you able to report at this point?
Hi, Aubrey. This is Sarah. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yes, thank you. Please go ahead.
Okay, great. This is Sarah Bakke for the record. Work Track 1 will be meeting tomorrow, January 31st at 20 UT. And we are planning on doing a recap of our outcomes from our January 10th call. We touched on application queuing, application submission period, and application fees and variable fees during that call. And we sent out a follow-up email looking for some input from folks. So if you haven't had a chance to read that, please do. And then tomorrow after the recap, we're going to start discussing systems and communications, and then hopefully if we have some additional time, we'll touch on the CC2 questions that we're looking to submit. And so that's what we have scheduled for tomorrow. Does anyone have any questions?
I see no hands, so thank you. Okay, so having done what team one and two, I'll go to three. And Karen or Robin, which of you would like to give the update? Yes, Karen, please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Karen Day, for the record. For our work team three, our next meeting will be on February the 7th, and at that time we are going to continue our work on objections, specifically the legal rights objection. We have a straw man proposal that was circulated to the list some weeks ago. We will be going through that all on the call. The other thing, in an introduction of a new topic, applicant expression, just to go over some of the background on that and get start thinking about that while we wrap up work on objections. With regard to CC2, we surveyed again some questions to the list. A week ago, not had any input or feedback on that. We need to wrap that up here about later this morning. But again, provide any feedback you have, any commentary on the list. That's it from work track three, unless Robin, that I forgot.
Okay, thank you. Does anyone? Okay, Robin says sounds good. Thanks. Yes, Susan, I see your hand. Please go ahead.
Yes, a quick question. I'm afraid you were very quiet at my end. I don't know if other people had difficulty hearing you, Karen, but would you mind just, you said after you talked about the straw man on the legal rights objection, what was it that you said you'd be dealing with after that on your next call?
Sorry about that. Can you hear me better now, Susan?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Yes. We will be introducing the topic of applicant freedom of expression.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Okay. Then I'll move on to work track four and work team four, and I guess it's Rubens who's going to do that one. Yes, I see your hand. Please go ahead, Rubens.
Thanks, Avery. Rubens, for the record. We had our last work track four meeting at 19 January, where we discussed CC2 questions. We have already established some questions, have evolved some questions during the call, and that is now reflected in the overall CC2 documents. Since the work track established a goal of finishing work track four, community consultation to questions by end of this month, which happens tomorrow, I strongly urge everyone who wants to add to work track four CC2 questions to do so commenting on the Google Doc or sending an email over the list or sending email to the track leadership or whatever method you prefer. But the idea is not to freeze at the end of this month, but we can only guarantee that your input will be considered if given today or tomorrow. And we'll consider whatever definition of tomorrow is for whatever time zone you are in. So you don't have to make that to a specific time zone. But when it, the month ends for all time zones, that's when warranty goes over. But we might be able to accommodate later, including the discussions with the full work group. Our next call is, will happen at February 9. Let me see February 9, 20 UTC. And our agenda for that meeting is mainly focused on discussing IDN, whether we allow IDN variants or not, whether you allow one-shot IDN TLDs or not. So if IDN is your thing, please come by. Thanks, Avery.
Thank you, Rubens. Any questions or comments? I see one comment from Kavus, and he says he prefers email. He has difficulties in reading Google Docs. So I would actually like to ask that, I guess it's all in one file, so perhaps we can send a copy of that file out, a PDF, so that people can submit their comments to the email list so that they can be included if they are unable to access the Google Doc, though the Google Doc is the preferable way for making comments. If it is at all possible for you to access the Google Doc. Okay, and I see your hand is still up, Rubens. Is that from before? Okay, I hear no response. I'll assume the hand is from before, but please speak up if it isn't. So we've got through all of the work teams, and now we'll move on to the overarching issues, community comment one, the update and next steps. I'm wondering, Steve, if I can start with you on just getting an update of how you see that document and what you see its state as, and then we can go from there.
Hi, Avery. Thanks. This is Steve Chan from staff, and sure, I can provide a brief update on that subject. So as everyone is probably aware, we've been able to make our way as a working group through all of the comments received in relation to Community Comment 1. And so the outcome of those discussions was a decision to establish, I believe, three drafting teams in relation to a few open items. And so that's pretty much where we're at, and it also sort of leads into next steps. So what we'd like to do, and likely after this call, if there's no objections, is to send around a handful of informal call for volunteers, which would, you know, relate to working group members. So the drafting teams would be in relation to different TLD types. So that'd be one of them. The second would be in relation to predictability and community input. So it'd be a framework related to those items. And the last one would be in relation to the mechanism for accepting applications. And I'm referring to rounds or another mechanism. So the idea is that if there are no objections on this call, staff and the leadership will agree on some language related to those informal call for volunteers I mentioned, and we'll circulate those after the call. I'm not sure if Jeff also had any comments on this, or Avery, if you wanted to just take it back, but that's the update. Thanks.
Thank you. Jeff, did you want to add anything? If not, what I'll add to it is, please volunteer. We have 6 people who are fairly well deep into leading the work tracks and having a fair amount of difficulty getting sufficient participation at times. So I really hope that others who have not been so active in the work tracks we'll jump in and work on these and volunteer for these teams going forward so that we can get that work done. Any comments or questions on those? Okay. So this work will go on in parallel with the work track that's being done, and, you know, basically hopefully we can get a draft of the CC1 with the outcome of those in the near future. The way I would see this going is the groups will work separately. They can do it online. They can schedule calls. They can, you know, on email. But then once they get to a draft, bring it to one of the meetings of the whole group so that we can discuss it and then figure out how we move on with it. So if there are no questions on that, and I see none, we can move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the C2 discussion. And there is a draft document in Google, and hopefully someone can send out a PDF of it. I can certainly do so if no one else can. And so basically what we probably need to do now is take a quick look at where we are in that document. So we start with each of the teams has a set of questions in here, and you could start seeing the first. And yes, Jeff, please, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. Yeah, I think you started at the right place, which is section two. I was going to tell people to kind of ignore section the intro language at this point, because that's a lot of that is the last CC1 that we sent out, so we haven't really been working on that intro language. So just you started at the right place, which is the list of questions, and then there's some other materials in the appendix.
Okay, thanks. Do you want to walk through this, or should I walk through this? We probably should walk through the questions that we've got there now, and either I can do it or you can do it.
I'll start and then turn it over, and then just and then we could just any specific questions we could just refer to some of the work team members or work team leaders that are here. Okay, so does everyone have the ability to? Does everybody have the ability to scroll themselves? Yes, good. Okay, I'm going to actually be looking. Great. I'm going to look at the Google version. So, Aubrey, if there are any questions, or if you could just, like, interrupt me and let me know that there's people in the chat. Right, so, thank you. The as you can see, there's you know, this is still very preliminary, and our goal is to get the questions finalized in the next couple weeks so that we could send this out by mid to late February and get responses back. You know, we'll do the normal, I believe it's now a 40-day public comment period or whatever the normal time period is now. It used to be 42 days, but then I got lost after that, so I'm not sure exactly how many days it is, but the plan is to put it out for the standard comment period, and also to solicit input from just all of the constituencies, stakeholder groups, advisory committees, supporting organizations, et cetera, basically anyone that wants to respond. And as you can see, the questions are more detailed than they were for, or at least the topics are more detailed than they were for CC1. So each of the work teams has been discussing individual areas and have come up with a set of either topics or questions that they'd like to ask about. The UC Work Track 1 has got some questions on applicant support, application fees, variable fees, application queuing, application submission period, and hopefully after the next call they may have one or two questions on systems and communications. The just going back to kind of general, I think the way that we are going to put this out is you could comment specifically by work teams questions. So we'll have them each in different comment areas. So, you know, kind of almost like if you remember the way the guidebook comments were received, it was by module. And here I think it might be best if we can get comments in by work team number where the questions are. This way we won't have such large document back. These questions are not the final wording at all. They are just brainstormed questions. So if, John, I see you say one of the questions is a little leading. If you want to take and do some edits on Google Docs, that's great. There's no pride in authorship here, meaning that none of us really will get bothered by any changes to the wording. But if you think it's leading, as long as we can maintain the crux of the question, I think that's the important part. And if you have additional questions that you want to add, I believe everyone has a suggestion, the ability to make suggestions in there so that we, the work track leaders and the leadership will see those and then discuss those with the individual work track team, as well as ultimately we would love to have the entire group, the working group, sign off on all of the questions that are being asked. So right now you'll see some questions from yes, please. Thanks.
Okay, yeah, you have two comments here. We have a Caboose comment that says, may we take it? I assume it's paragraph by paragraph, please. I'm not quite sure I understood the abbreviation PRA and by PRA, but I believe it's by paragraph. And then John Nevitt also wrote the application fee question seems to be pretty leading in his opinion. So thanks, and Caboose does have his hand up.
Yes, Avery, thank you very much. Paragraph by paragraph is more straightforward because we cannot jump from one to the other. On paragraph one, introduction, I have no comment. On paragraph two, if it is allowed, I may have some comment. So, but it depends whether you agree to the paragraph by paragraph or not. That is my suggestion. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Well, we're certainly going through in the list of questions, but we've decided that at this point, those first paragraphs there are basically just placeholders, and they haven't been worked on yet. What we're focusing on is where we start with the questions and not actually talking about the front material yet. So that wasn't what we were going to discuss. So we've jumped over those paragraphs directly to the table where we're in the work track one. So that's okay. I'll pass it back over to you, Jeff.
Thanks, Aubrey. Sorry, it took me a second to get off mute. So on the I was just going over kind of the overall format of the document and then how we'll receive comments. If we do want to go back and look at some of the questions that came up from Work Track 1, we can do that. If we just want to brainstorm some additional topic, we can do that. So for work track one, I'll go back. Even though accreditation programs is listed there, there's another group that was being formed by ICANN to discuss accreditation issues. So for that, it's blank at the moment, depending on what that group is constituted to do and what gaps there'll be for us to fill in. So I don't anticipate any questions on on accreditation programs, but the extent that there are gaps, we may decide to ask a few questions there. On applicant support, we basically have a question there about two different suggestions that were made to the group. One is broadening support to IDNs or other criteria, and the second is focusing applicant support on the middle applicant defined as developed but struggling regions as opposed to underserved or underdeveloped regions. And so there's just a general question on whether there's value in those suggestions or if there are other areas in which the applicant support programs could extend. I guess I'll just stop there. Caboose, is your hand up? Or?
Yes, your hand up for the...
It is a new hand from Caboose.
It's a new hand. On just application support, applicant support. Whenever they ask a question, saying that, for instance, broadening support to IDNs or other, I think we should add your standard word, if yes, and then we should add the reasons. Because just somebody saying, yes, you have to broaden without any reason, we would have difficulty to understand. So if somebody proposed some diversion or some departure from what is today, so you give the reason. So I would suggest that when we say broadening support to IDN or other criteria, and then we add a comma or whatever you want to add, if yes, please give the reasons and describe. So that would help us to follow up. Because as far as GAC is concerned, for instance, if you want to send it to the SOAC, I would like to propose the GAC to discuss it in the Copenhagen meeting or between now and Copenhagen to come up. So we need to ask this question. If yes, provide the reasons and describe how and why. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. Back to you, Jeff.
Okay. Yep, thank you. That's helpful, Caboose, and we will we'll rewrite those questions to make it a little bit more clear and then to specify, if yes, add more detail. Are there any other questions that Caboose, you have a new hand?
Yes, I am sorry, and please beg me your pardon that. Why you say that concentrating on the middle applicant versus the undeserved or underserved? Why do you make such selections? I know you want to go to the middle, not high, not low, but why it is this? It gives this thing that you have decided to forget the underserved or other underdeveloped countries and so on and so forth. Why we make such a selection? Why you want to put on the middle? Do you think that there would be no problems in the underserved or underdeveloped countries that we ask this question? Just I want to have the reason. I'm not opposing to that. It gives some impression that underdeveloped or underserved countries will not be very happy, because we have in the GAC many sessions about this, and in the ICANN also there was some general session about underserved or underdeveloped countries or non-developed countries. So why do we take this middle as one of the options? Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. If you don't mind, I am going to see if one of the work team leaders, Sarah, I think you might be the only one on here. Sarah, can you answer that question?
Yeah, can you ask the question again, please?
Yeah, so Kavouros asked about the second part of question on the applicant support, talking about the middle applicant, and he just wanted to know what that suggestion means as far as the middle and how that came about so that we can discuss that in Copenhagen, because I'm sure that Kavouros and others will be asked about that.
Sure, yes, this is Sarah Bakke for the record. So the middle applicant idea came up during the ICANN meeting in Hyderabad, and Krista and I attended an APAC session, and that is where this idea was brought up. And a middle applicant, as I show there, I gave the definition of what they proposed as the middle applicant during that session is developed but struggling regions instead of just underserved or underdeveloped. And it just a way, I think, of expanding the program. It came out of APAC. I'm having a brain fart right now. I can't think of anything else regarding it, but that basically was the context of it, just looking to expand the program to maybe encompass some others who were struggling but didn't necessarily qualify as underserved.
Thank you. I see Caboose put a question in, what is the criteria to decide or identify who is a middle applicant?
Hi, Caboose, this is Sarah. That was not discussed. It was very high level item that was touched upon, and so nothing regarding criteria identifying who that would be has been discussed. It is just a very broad, up in the air idea at this point with no specifics.
Thank you. Caboose, I see your hand is up again. Please
yes, I understand. Thank you very much. Either we put some note or you put it in the inverted comma means that yet to be defined. But I think I suggest a small amendment. When we say focusing on the middle applicant, we should add something while still responding or duly responding to the underserved and underdeveloped countries to remove the impression that they are not forgotten and nothing. Although focus is a clear word, that means you do not. But still, it's better to clearly mention that while still the applicant from the undeserved or underserved or underdeveloped would be duly considered. We just try to slightly amend to remove that difficulty, if possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Jeff, I see. Oh, Steve, please, I see your hand. I see Steve's hand, sorry.
Thanks, Harvey, no problem. This is Steve from staff.
Hi, Steve.
And so I was actually at that session with Sarah, so I'll see if I can jog my memory as well. And so I actually raised my hand initially to make a sort of similar point to what Caboose just mentioned. And so this idea of a middle applicant was not to exclude support for underserved or underdeveloped regions, but it was also to perhaps supplement the program with for this concept of a middle applicant. I believe the idea was that part of the issues or challenges that those from underserved or underdeveloped regions are facing is it's not just financial, but it can also be related to to infrastructure in the region. So perhaps there isn't a registrar system set up or a network of registrars. Maybe the connectivity is bad, or whatever the reason may be. There's infrastructural problems that they may see. And then there's also just business choices. Maybe it doesn't make sense in an underserved or underdeveloped region to be undertaking the establishment of a registry. So I believe, if I'm recollecting this correctly, that so in addition to supporting underserved or underdeveloped, it should be expanded to also perhaps look at this concept of a middle applicant. I don't know if I remember that exactly correctly. I'm sure Sarah will be happy to tell me if I got that wrong, but just wanted to try and provide a little more additional context. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. I see no other hands, so back to you, Jeff.
Okay, thank you, Aubrey, and thanks, Steve. What we can do, I think, as well, is provide some context for that question, as Caboose has suggested, perhaps even say, you know, where the suggestion came, and so we can give a little background, because I think Caboose's question will be shared amongst a number of other people that want to respond. I see Caboose has a new hand up. So, Caboose?
Excuse me, are you on the application fee?
We're just about to get there.
If you are on application fees, I have worked for many years on the cost recovery for other areas. I don't think that we could establish a ceiling for cost recovery, even saying that could be a limit, because that would be totally arbitrary. The meaning of the cost recovery, which is different from the revenue or income, is that we just ask for something to cover the costs. So I think if you want to change the existing 180K, one could say that based on the analysis made to justify we need more than or less than or different value for 180K. I don't think we could establish any arbitrary ceiling. It would not be good, and it would be criticized that where this ceiling comes from, because it no longer would be cost recovery. It would be revenue. So could you kindly consider the situation and try to remedy the matter in a way that this doubt will be taken that it is not looking for a revenue or not any arbitrary limit on the cost recovery. But we could say that based on the examination or analysis that is being done or are being done to see whether this value could be modified higher or lower. We should try to qualify that. Otherwise, I have some difficulty to argue that in my constituency, our constituency, too, for such a arbitrary value. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. I don't see anything in the current question asking about a ceiling. I do see a question about a floor or a minimum, meaning that, let's say, after the cost analysis, it comes out that really it only costs $5,000 to review what's required. The question I think is asking, you know, should there be some floor or minimum that is above a actual cost in order to, well, it's wrong to say to keep people out, but to basically ensure that the costs are high enough to discourage squatting on domains, on top of a domain, or the use of those domains for an improper purpose. But I do take your point on the ceiling. I see that you have your hand raised again. So, Caboose?
Yes, it is whether it is minimum or maximum that is ceiling. But even minimum, if the minimum is not based on the cost recovery analysis, that we need such, how you could establish a minimum? If you say 100,000 minimum, but the cost is 140,000, where is 40,000 come from? Should come from. So I don't think that we could establish minimum or maximum. Everything should be based on the result of the first round to see that there would be this value plus minus, and you could have some plus minus X percent, and it will be decided by reply will be given and so on. So I don't think either we could have minimum nor we could have maximum without analyzing the cost recovery concepts. That's really based on the analysis on cost, which really has been affected. So we cannot have neither minimum nor maximum. Thank you. I'm sorry. I apologize for coming in again, but that is the difficulty that I have. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Carlos. And I think certainly that would feed into an answer. Do you have any comments on the question itself? I think what we're trying to focus on now is the way to ask the question or additional questions to ask as opposed to answering it now. Since we'll have plenty of time after the comment period begins to answer the questions. So I want to go back to a comment that John had raised on the list, which is that he thought the question was too leading. John, can you, I don't know if you can participate on this call or speak, but if you could come up with ways to make it less leading and more objective, we would certainly welcome that. And I'm just looking at the chat. John's typing. Take out the givens, okay? So basically without the context. So just say, we could ask first is, do we still believe that the fee should be based on cost recovery? Is one question. If there is a surplus, how should that surplus be used is a good question. A third question might be the cost for this past round was $185,000. Is that or was that reasonable? And even if we use a cost recovery basis, should there be some floor or minimum threshold we should establish to prevent squatting on top of a domain or something like that? I think John said he's happy to do it offline, so that's good. I just gave a couple examples of ways we could make that a little more objective. On the variable fees, jumping to the next question, this is basically asking, should new GTLD application be variable based on, essentially based on the type of application? And so this was an idea that came up to maybe say, well, some applications might not require as much review as others, and therefore should we have some set of fees that distinguish between those types of applications? And what we came out with on those discussions basically we felt that, or at least the working group discussions leaned toward the notion of a one fee fits all. So it's asking about whether there's support for that.
Avery again.
Yes, Avery, please. Avery, yep.
This is Avery. There seem to be a couple questions in the chat. Kavos put, should there be some sort of periodical review of cost recovery value? Steve Chan had a comment. Jeff, maybe we could ask a question of incoming applications. And then Rubens wrote, I think the recurring fees is more of a deterrent to squatting than application fees move into seven digits. Let's not tempt people. Okay, yes, Vaibhav, you have your hand up, please.
Yes, Avery. Thank you. This is Vaibhav Agarwal for the record.
thanks for giving me an opportunity to address the group. Now, I think my two cents on this point would be that the concept of middle applicant or concept of underserved regions definitely has to be kept in mind in this. Clearly stating that if it is one fee fits for all, we have to now go back to Kavus's point just a minute back, saying what is the calculation for cost recovery, and then when you bring this up here, each and every item is actually interconnected with each other. So the fee would be connected to the entire business model of the registry that is applying for the string. And that fee in turn has to be dependent on underserved regions also trying to participate in the entire process. There would be customers in those regions. In the developing economy, there isn't that much money, and so on and so forth. So I think this needs to be drilled down a little more. Further on, discussions would need to have more clarity on this. One fee fits all. Thank you.
Thanks, Avi. I think those comments are comments. This is Jeff.
There were comments from.
Sorry, Avery, go on. I think.
It said a reminder that a portion. Yeah, we're having some breaking problems. I apologize. I don't know if I'm responsible for it. A reminder that a portion of the $185,000 was allocated to the risk fund. Whatever the method to be used in the future should consider how the risk fund should be accounted for. I guess, and this is an addition from me, would also on knowing how much is actually sitting in a risk fund at the moment, because I'm not sure that we would need to build a whole new risk fund for each application window. So there's probably a lot in that calculation. And Ruben said, it seems that part of the users are connected to others with high delay. Oh, okay, that's a comment on the thing, but possibly the AC to phone bridge link. So, yeah, we are having some technical problems, and it may be that. Okay. Jeff, I pass it back to you now. Apologies for the interruption.
Yeah, thanks, Aubrey. I think there is a little bit of a delay between when I'm speaking and when you hear it. I'm not sure why that is, but hopefully we can get that fixed for the next call. But I think these are all great questions, and we're taking note of these in the comment section or the notes section on the side so that we can then add them to this list. And I do agree with the point that a lot of questions are interrelated, where the fees might be dependent on some of the other questions that we ask. And I think those are great points to make in a response to these questions when they are asked. If we jump ahead to application queuing, this was a topic I think that was discussed on the last FRAC 1 call. This talks about there seemed to have been support for the lottery system instead of a first-come, first-served for a number of different reasons that was talked about on that call. If rounds are not used, though, and the method were just accepting applications, then, how would that work with a lottery system? Or would it have to be a first-come, first-serve in that type of situation? There was also a suggestion in the European submission on communities that went into a discussion of whether we should have a period to apply for a string and then another period for others to apply for the same string. I think given that report, we might want to ask a question about that particular method of queuing applications. Just try to look at the chat.
There's a couple comments. I can read them. There's Alexander.gay who said, please also factor in abuse, in quotes. Oops, I just lost it. Portfolio applicants will simply form shell companies in developing countries to save fees. This seems more like an answer to a question than a question. Then Cavuse wrote, there's more than one cost recovery model as well as more than one method on how to calculate cost recovery fees. And that also points to possible answer space. Alexander again offered another answer. The lottery could be built in by random number assigned during application. Steve wrote, channeling ICANN legal, I would suggest using a different word than lottery. And then Jeff answers, how about sweepstakes? And then Vaibhav says, shell companies need to go through vetting process of the applicant. That is already part of the process. Just keep reading. Steve said, as long as it's not a lottery and is able to legally be supported by ICANN. Sure. Ruben, Alexander, that can be dealt with by dealing registration restrictions that larger operates wouldn't like. If applicant support requires not selling registrants in the OECD countries, Spec 12 registration restrictions, as for community TLDs, no commercial interest doing so. These are all good possible answers to these questions, but I'm not sure how they actually affect the question. And having finished my reading, I'll hand it back to Jeff.
Thanks, Aubrey. And the fact that there's so many comments means that these are good questions to ask. And so we'll certainly appreciate these answers coming back. And before we close, because I know we only have a couple minutes, or are we scheduled for minutes? Can someone remind me? 90. Okay, good. Never mind then. Great. So then the next question relates to the application submission period, and this is talking about the period when the application was made available and applicants could start entering information into the system. That was a 90-day period in the last round, although it actually got extended for some reasons of a glitch, but technically it was supposed to be 90 days. And so the questions here focus on, is that the proper amount of time? Is a fixed period of time for accepting applications even the right approach? Would this have implications on applicant support? And if we have a few next rounds followed by continuous application periods, how should the application submission period be handled? So these are all good questions. Rules, you have your hand up?
Yes, I have a hand up. The first is a suggestion, if you and distinguished colleague agree. I suggest that we swap application queuing and application submission period, because the logic is that you start the application submission period and then go to the application queuing. And if that is accepted, then I have a second proposal. If it is not accepted, still I have a second proposal on application submission period. You have to be very clear to talk about the three possibilities. One possibility of several rounds, the other possibility is first come, first serve, and the third possibility would be a combination of both that you propose here. So I think we should, the question should be open. Do we need to go continue with these several rounds? Sub-question one, sub-question two, or go to the first come, first serve, and sub-question three would be a combination of some, having some round and then going to the first come, first serve. So this would be more logical. Whether we apply the swapping or not, but still this is valid. My suggestion is valid for consideration by colleagues in the application submission period. We should be quite clear of the three distinct options. Thank you.
Thanks, Caruth. I think that's a good suggestion, or all of those are good suggestions. I don't see an issue with revising the order of those questions, of the topics, but perhaps we'll save all of those questions for when we have the all of the questions finalized, then we can decide on the best order. But I think we'll write down your point, and to make sure that we keep it in mind for when we do have the final order. Donna has a comment saying that the application submission period may want to include questions about advertising the submission period. Donna just brought up a topic on essentially the communication period, I think, which was in the last round. I think there was a, was it a six-month communication period? It was a long period of time where the where ICANN was, which ICANN had to wait until the end of before opening up the, technically opening up the round. So I think that's a whole series of discussions. I'm not sure if that, and I might put Sarah on the spot here, but that may be a topic that's within communications, although maybe not. That might refer to other types of communications. But we will go back and think about some questions we can ask on the communication period as well, and to see whether that is or how that plays in with rounds versus a different type of procedure like a first come, first serve process, how that would play in. Alexander has a comment on there that says portfolio applicants can turn out applications within 24 hours, but if we want meaningful applications, by and for example, geo entities or communities, they need time to put together their consensus policies. And Alexander, thanks for that point. That's again something that should come back in the form of a response to these questions. I take your point, and certainly look forward to getting that feedback when the questions are asked. So that said, those are so far the questions we have in WorkTrack 1, and I'm sure some questions will come out of this week's conversations on systems communications. And then applicant guidebook, that subject really refers to whether the proper way to issue this kind of request for proposals is through the form of applicant guidebook that we use, whether we need to create different versions of an applicant guidebook depending on where you fit into the ecosystem. So in other words, if you are a back-end registry operator, could you get some sort of condensed version of the guidebook? Or those were questions that came out in the original discussion group on that. So are we ready then to move on to WorkTrack 2?
Caboose just raised his hand.
Yes, below this application submission period, there are a series of numerical orders, some 1, some 2, some 3, some 4. What are they? Are they the structure of something, a book, a structure of the report? What does it mean, this thing? They should have some titles.
They refer...
Or should be connected to something.
To the different work tracks. The numbers in that left-hand column refer to the different work tracks.
But it's not clear for the reader. Maybe we should indicate what you said. Because when I saw that, I said, what does it mean?
Okay, certainly we will have to put a... It says in the top column, at the header of the column, it does say work track and then subject. but we can certainly make it plainer for the reader that doesn't catch that meaning from the header. So certainly take a note that, you know, the number there refers to the work track, and perhaps make it more explanatory than just using a header at the top of the first entry. Perhaps repeat the header on each page as we reproduce it. But thank you very much for that comment. Okay, back to you, Jeff.
Thanks, Aubrey. So, as you said, Work Track 2 has some subjects listed, but no questions yet. They relate to the legal, regulatory, and contractual requirements. Those questions should come out of this week's conversation, but just so you could see the topics, those are listed in under number 2. So there'll be questions on the BIC registry agreement. Second level RPMs is listed there. I don't envision any questions on that because that's really the subject at this point for the other PDP that's going on, with the exception of a couple different dispute processes that were reserved for us, like the restrictions dispute resolution policy and a couple others. I'm not sure we'll have any questions on that. Reserve names, I know that there's questions coming out of there. Those discussions, that's both at the top and the second level. Registrant protections, that's what we were talking about last week, the last call, which was on COI and background checks and some other protections in there. So without going through the full list, these are just the topics, and Work Track 2 is now working on coming up with specific questions to ask. So we're going to jump on to the Work Track 3, unless anyone's got any general comments. Okay, for Work Track 3, I'm going to point everyone to page 6, I think it is, or page 7, where it's in the appendix. I believe page 6. So these are some of the questions that have come up from Work Track 3 so far. Yes, you have your hand raised.
I have one, if you agree. I think after the bullet, I would suggest another bullet saying that other PDP or other non-PDP, comma, if any. You have some 5 bullets in one page. You have 2 bullets in the other page. At the end of that, I would suggest for your consideration to add another bullet saying that other PDP or PDP on other issues or non-PDP issues, if any. Just leave it open to the people if they have the suggestions. Thank you.
Okay. So we will put in some a placeholder for those, explain that those are being addressed in other PDPs, but if there are any general comments, I think is your suggestion that there's an opening for people to put in some general comments. Is that your suggestion?
Yes, if you and Avery allow me, I think for the period, for the time for the reply, I suggest that in the third line we delete, if possible, because we should not put in the possibility, and the third thing that please forward your comment and input to us by, say, preferably a date, but not later than another date. So you have 2 dates. One is a preference, whatever date you agree, or it is suggested, and the other one is obligatory and mandatory dates, because you could not make it open forever. If you say it's possible, that means people say, okay, it is not possible, then you do not get any reply. So we should be quite more straightforward. So saying that by some date, preferably, but not later than another date as an obligation and mandatory. So we need to get a reply. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Kavos. We will take.
Yeah, no, I was thanking Kavos, and I just wanted to point out that the WorkTrack 3 stuff is on page 7, not 6, for anybody that was looking for it. But back to you. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Thanks. So, again, this is Jeff Newman. So far, WorkTrack 3, that's the group headed by Karen Day and Robin Gross, have come up with these 6 questions. There'll likely be additional ones after the discussion next week. But these are the ones so far. So the first one is a question that came up, and we'll probably have to provide a little more context for the question, but this question certainly came up in one of the discussions, which is parties had attempted, or there was at least an inference to parties attempting to game the objection procedures. So we're asking whether there was any evidence that they're aware of that a party or parties attempted to do this. And to be specific, there was a question, and Caruso, I'll get to you in a minute after I go through these. There was a question, actually after the second question, I'll come back to you, whether the responder believes that the use of an independent objector is warranted in future rounds. If not, why not? If yes, you do believe that there still is a role for the independent objector, would you propose any restrictions or modifications be placed on the IO for future rounds? Kavouros.
Yes, I have just one question. Sorry for misunderstanding or not properly understanding. What do you mean by game? You put game between two apostrophe or something. What is game, please?
So thanks, Kavouros. That's a good question and something that I guess different people will define differently. I think from the tone of the discussions, I think what people were talking about on the call was using the objection period to delay the progress of an application or multiple applications, or the when there was no reasonable basis to file such an objection. And so there were people that claimed that filing an objection was a good way to delay that application while parties could either negotiate a private agreement or could prevent the introduction of that domain into the marketplace. So those were the examples that were used in the discussion, but I'm sure other people may have other definitions of gaming, so potentially providing some context could help.
If you just extend that to slightly make it more explanatory, it would be very good for the people like me that did not understand what the game is. And then not to ask him for the floor again. So all questions that you have, all of them are good questions. Then you ask the question, and we should add after that, if yes, please describe, or why, and describe. So we should ask them, but not only simply saying that yes. Because sometimes you ask the questions that do you think that should be changed? If people say yes, they should describe why. Why it should be changed, and how it should be changed. So just a guide for the people who reply. Thank you.
Thanks, Kavouros. I think that's a good suggestion. I think we will take that comment for each of the questions going forward as well. So we've made note of that. Question number 3, do you believe that parties, should say two disputes, should be able to choose between 1 and 3-member panels, and should the cost of objections reflect that choice? Context for that question is that some of the types of disputes, there was a choice between whether to have 1 panelist or 3 panelists, and there was some discussion that where there were 3 panelists, the parties felt much more comfortable with the outcomes since, it wasn't just a feeling of one person. But then there was a discussion on how much that would increase the costs of the objection. So this question really reflects on those discussions. And related, I think, is what can be done to improve consistency and predictability with regard to, well, this question asks about string similarity in future rounds. I think that question might be extendable to all of the different types of objections, but this is the string similarity review where, string similarity objections where certain cases came out on one side and other cases, even with the exact same facts, or very similar facts, came out on the other side. And so this is a question of what can we do to have more consistency and predictability. And we saw that ICANN addressed two of these situations by doing its own review, but there were certainly examples that were left out. And I think there was a third where, if I'm correct, John, I think Donuts was involved in a dispute where ICANN agreed to take on a third one, or is that still ongoing? But I know that there were other decisions that were not, other decisions that were made where which were just inconsistent and did not necessarily have another review. The fifth question is, given a general understanding that community priority evaluation did not provide consistency and predictability in the 2012 round, do you believe there's a need for community priority in subsequent procedures? This is a leading question. I'll just channel John Nevitt, who said that questions that start with a given is pretty leading, so we'll try to make this question more objective, but ask about whether community priority should still play a role in subsequent procedures, subsequent rounds, whatever, however we decide to move forward. And then finally, should community simply be an additional category that will be in string contention sets on equal footing as a brand or open generic application? So if Karen or Robin, can you provide a little more context on number six? Sorry to put you on the spot. And while Karen and Robin are getting ready, I'll ask Kavulis to ask his question.
Yes, the question may be irrelevant, but I think in all this process, why we have not mentioned anything about auction, whether auction is a proper or is not proper, and so on. Why, where it has been addressed, maybe I was not at your meeting when you addressed that, why it is not part of this categories of various good questions, asking the people about auctions, how to be implemented. So that is a
question. Thanks, Kavulis. That is in work track three, although they have not yet gotten to talk about that issue, but probably is definitely a good idea to ask questions on the auction topic in CC2. So we'll take that back and see if we can come up with some questions, even though we have not yet had a chance to discuss that in work track three. Karen, I'll give you the floor now.
Yes, Jeff. To answer your question about question six, that originally started out as a part of question five. One of our participants thought that it would be separated out. But to my mind, when it was written, it was a part of question five. There had been some discussion at some point about did we need to continue on giving community preference, looking back at the rationale for that, and perhaps in subsequent rounds, community applications should be treated equal. So that was the context of the conversation, again, one of our members felt like it should be split out into two separate questions, and certainly it needs massaging, so please, anyone, help us get that across. But that was the genesis of it.
Okay, thanks, Karen. Any questions for Karen? Okay. So with the note that we should add some questions on auctions for WorkTrack 3 and maybe some other subjects that have not covered, we can move on to WorkTrack 4. And these are questions. Oh, thanks, Aubrey. Yeah, I was going to say about WorkTrack 4 is that these questions have been on the WorkTrack 4 list for a while now. I don't believe there were any comments that were received. I'm not sure we need to go one by one through these, but perhaps we can just, people can take a look at these. But as Ruben said on when he gave his update about an hour ago now, Ruben's basically said that he wanted to finalize these. So if you have any comments or questions, please put them into the Google Doc and get back to us as soon as possible. With that, Aubrey, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you, Jeff, for going through these. I see two hands. I see Karen's up. I have a feeling that's a remainder from the last time she spoke. Yes, okay. And Cavus, please go ahead.
Yes, I have a question or perhaps rather a suggestion on section starting 4.2. You have a series of good questions, but I suggest that when you ask this question, should you have this or should you have that, you should ask pros and cons. Because just saying that I want this, I want that, you should have the reasons. Either you say the reasons for the selection or pros and cons or advantage or disadvantage. Otherwise, it is very difficult to evaluate the answer that it comes. So I don't want to go any of these. All of it applies to all of them up to the end, all of the questions. Do you believe that the financial capability should be demonstrated on application time or could be demonstrated at or just before contract? If the answer, whatever the answer is, should be give reasons or pros and cons or advantage and disadvantage. That would help us to see what is the temperature of the replies. Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. I want to point out one thing that Cheryl wrote in the comments, which is comments only open until EOM, end of something, end of month, I guess.
End of month, every end of month, yeah.
Okay, thank you. It took me a second to figure out what M could be, but that makes sense, which is today, which is essentially the case for all of them, though some of them, and then, of course, we will talk about them again in the full meeting before sending them out. So that won't be the last period, but that will be the last period within the work tracks. We will then have another pass through them before sending it out, when we will also go through the introductory text and such that we skipped this time. So I want to thank Jeff for having taken us through that and everybody for their comments. And I can see that we're going to get a good set of answers to these questions, since so many people seem very ready with answers to the questions. I'm looking forward to seeing lots of submissions from all over the place when these questions do come out. That brings us, with 5 minutes left, I believe, to any other business. So did any other business questions or issues emerge during this meeting? Don't see any hands. I don't see any notes. I don't hear any voices. So that being the case, I guess we don't have any other business, in which case I would like to thank everyone for attending this meeting. I'd like to thank everyone for participating, and I'd like to thank everybody for speaking slowly. I don't think I noted a single person, well, perhaps, speaking too quickly. So thank you very much. And with that, I end the call. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you. Again, the meeting has been adjourned. Operator, please stop the recording for us and just keep all of the room. Everyone, have a great remainder of your day.